Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Just a reminder, we're at Bloom tomorrow in the park. In the, well, you can't miss it. It's massive. I was driving by there. You're absolutely massive. The usual Funny Friday crew at the RT stand from 1:45 until 3 o'clock. Loads of giveaways and lots of fun, and hopefully the weather will be with us. Now, we've been talking, and Philip was talking about it yesterday, about compensation claims and people who can sue but won't sue and don't sue. Gary O'Keefe. Gary, good afternoon. Gary's in Abbey Leaks. Gary, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
And Gary, what happened to you, and could you have sued?
Yes, of course, I could. I lost an eye when I was about 17 in a farm accident.
Your eye?
Yeah. But at the time, you know, I suppose we have slipped into a little bit of a money is tight and all the rest of it when I was growing up. And, you know, when there was an opportunity maybe to get some extra money and you were entitled to it, people could have been forgiven for saying, oh, you should go and get insurance. Sure, it's covered, you know. But people often forget that while insurances are covered, they wreck businesses, you know, with increased premiums and all that kind of thing. My accident happened on a family farm, a relative's farm. And the man was, you know, struggling to keep a family going and all the rest of it. And he certainly didn't get up that morning to literally take the eye out of my head no more than I did. So it was a pure accident. And I remember as a kid, I was 17 years old in 1989.
Yeah.
You know, more or less the adults around me said, well, you should go and sue because you've lost your eye. It's a terrible thing. I remember at the time thinking, well, that's not going to fix it. And it's not going to change anything. And I'd rather have luck than money. And I counted that kind of behaviour as bad karma and bad luck. So I said, look, I don't need to do that because I'll have 1,000 times the luck in the rest of my days than I did.
Wow. Yeah. And like, obviously there is a physical cost of losing an eye. What happened? What happened, Gary?
It's just a basic enough farm accident. I got some steel in my eye operating machine. And to be fair, I wasn't wearing safety glasses. Like, the safety culture in 1989 wasn't as strong as it is now. So, you know, I would have contributed a bit to that accident, as to be honest, most people do. And in all safety cultures, and, you know, where you see it a lot in construction and farming and all these places, the staple saying is that accidents don't happen, they're caused. So everybody has some culpability.
Okay. And did you know when the accident happened? Did you know what had happened to you?
Yeah,
follow
I mean,
me.
You get a hot lump of steel going through your eye, Joe. It hurts.
No.
Yeah, of course you would know. No. Look, it's not about that. That happened and it's over and all the rest of it. But yeah, sure you'd know. Of course you would.
Okay.
And it took a long time for mine to go.
Okay. Stay with us, Gary. I want to talk about other things you've been doing. Tom Staunton. Tom, good afternoon.
Sure. How are you?
Again, could have sued but decided not to sue. What happened in your case, Tom?
Well, no, it's a long time ago, and it probably wasn't quite as serious as the last gentleman there.
Yeah, well,
it was an eye, but it was back probably at the beginning of the 70s. I was working in a supermarket down over in the west of Ireland in Galway City, and I got my hand caught in a bacon slicer and lost, got cut off 3 fingers on my left hand, the little finger and the next 2. Now, there were literally hanging off by the skin, the little finger and the next 2 before my index finger.
Okay.
Because the blade of the thing hit me on the knuckle. So I was rushed up to hospital in the regional hospital in Galway.
Yeah.
And by some freak of luck, in the theatre in the regional in Galway that I was taken in, it's now called the University Hospital, there was an Egyptian surgeon, I won't ever forget his name. His name was Hosni. And he had some medical students from University College Galway in the theatre, I think, with him. So when he saw me being taken in, he kind of cleared them off, and he said he was going to have a go. And I can remember what he said to me, if it does not work, we will put them in the bin, because they were literally hanging off by the skin.
Wow.
So I think he spent, as far as I know, it's a long time ago, Joe, and I'm over 21 now. He spent, I think, about 7 hours at it. I know he used some kind of wire because as they were dressing the wound in the months afterwards, I could see the wire joining the bones. But thankfully, I still have the 3 fingers. Now, I don't have any, the knuckles don't bend, so those 3 fingers only bend from halfway up. And so I don't have a good grip on my left hand, but they're still there. Now, afterwards, I had three solicitors contacted me wanting to act on my behalf.
Mm-hmm. Because there was obviously no guard on that bacon slicer.
There was no guard on it. Absolutely not. Now, I was slicing rashers for a lady. Oh, she was leaning in, nosing, watching what I was doing. I leant forward to ask her to keep back, and the machine moved, and my hand was on the bar. So my mother had a big influence on it. She was very happy that I had my fingers, and she kind of convinced me not to go any further with it. And I've had a great life ever since. I'm in my 70s now, and I think it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I was out of work for I think about 5 or 6 months.
Okay.
While they patched this thing up, I didn't get paid by the company because I think they assumed I was going to take an action against them. I got £7.50 a week workman's compensation, and that's all I got. And I went back to work in the premises afterwards. So it was different times. But I credit my mother for convincing me not to take any action. She was very happy that I still had my fingers. Now,
okay.
It took this man a long time for them to get back to work, and I will thank Mary Costello, Mary Gleason, my physiotherapist. Now unfortunately, she's not with us anymore. I will thank her for getting my fingers back working again, because I did a lot of physiotherapy on them.
And your mother said, don't take a case, one, because I'm so grateful you still have your fingers. But Gary was saying it's his decision, where he could have sued for the loss of an eye, no less. Yeah. And you've three fingers, pretty dramatic as well. Gary said he's had nothing, because he didn't sue, he's had nothing but he felt good karma ever since.
Absolutely. I've had a great life ever since. I'm in my mid-70s now, and life has been great for me. And I think that was one of the... Maybe that had something to do with... Somebody had that Egyptian surgeon in the theatre when I was taken in. Somebody had him in there. That was the freak, to have him in the theatre, in the hospital when
and
I was taken in.
And he worked on you for what, 6, 7 hours?
So I believe 6 or 7 hours. I was knocked out, I believe. But I remember waking up after the anaesthetic wore off, and my arm was tied up, and it's my left hand, and I looked up and the three fingers were still there.
Even though you had seen...
The nails didn't grow for months or years afterwards.
Okay.
Nails didn't grow.
Circulation didn't come back,
but it eventually did.
Okay. But not to be too graphic, but you, from your description, and fair play to that surgeon, but you say it was good karma. You arrived in that hospital...
Carrying the fingers in my left hand.
Carrying your right fingers from your right hand in your left hand?
No, carrying the fingers from my left hand in my left hand. They were sitting on the palm of my hand. Well, having been crushed at the knuckles, through.
You're a good man.
And now... I believe a couple of people count out on the floor of the supermarket, and I know there was blood on the ceiling of the supermarket, but I was in my early 20s, and things like that didn't bother me too much, you know. I got through it. I spent a lot of time in hospital when I was a young child anyway, so hospitals didn't bother me too much.
Okay, Tom, stay with us. I just want to say to Gary, people are saying, are you the Gary that has the Facebook page One Eye on the World?
Yeah.
And I remind listeners that Gary lost his eye in a workplace accident when he was 17 and decided to leave it at that, not to sue. What does One Eye in the World mean?
Well, Joe, I suppose, as I was chatting to Philip, everything is about a choice. So the choice not to sue or to sue is your own choice, and no one can force you to do anything. So my choice was to use everything I have to my own advantage. And One Eye in the World is a travel blog that started for fun, obviously aptly named over the fact that I've got one eye. And the mission is to visit every country in the world. And I'm busy doing that at the moment with various people, friends and family and acquaintances. And we are up to 83 countries at the moment. We do a lot of kind of adventure travel just for fun. But in February of next year, we've taken on a big challenge to set a world record at the longest motorcycle ride on ice.
Okay.
So myself and an international group of riders, including Declan Mack from Ireland and Kevin Eamons from Ireland and a few other guys from Germany and Lithuania and Russia and all the places like this, we're going to ride on Lake Baikal from the bottom, from the south to the north, in February. So Lake Baikal is the biggest freshwater body of in the world. It's a mile deep, and it freezes hopefully about a metre thick, which is going to allow us to ride the full length of it, which is 700 kilometres.
But Gary, Do you believe you would be doing this, insofar as anyone can, do you believe you would be doing this if the accident had not happened?
Well, it's a good question. I suppose everything forms you along the way. And there was a great guy, you probably heard of Viktor Frankl, who was a prisoner in a concentration camp mm-hmm. in Germany during the World War II. And he said no matter what the Nazis did to him, they could take everything from him, physically, any way they could, but they couldn't choose what he chose to think about. So you can choose what you want to do yourself okay. or what you want to think about yourself. So what happened to me then was, and I can't tell you why, but it was just, I suppose it was always a positive enough kind of an outlook on things. But if you can get yourself onto a platform where you can say, right, this has happened, it's over. Nothing is going to change the fact that it's happened, whatever it is. And all should be in your head now is what's going to be next. So that's what I did, and that's what I used. And you mean I went back and I played hurling after I lost my eye. I probably didn't play an awful lot of it, to be fair, before that, and I was equally as bad at it after okay. I lost it as before. But, you know, people often say to you, you can't do that because of your eye, and they're right in their own head. Because if you start off with saying you can't do something, my kids will kill me for saying this, because they said, Dad, I can't do this. I say, you're dead right. You can't if you say you can't, and you can if you say you can't.
Okay, okay.
So that's a bit of the message that we try to get out in the travel blog as well.
Okay. Well, Gary, safe travels, and indeed Tom as well, Tom Staunton and Gary O'Keefe, both telling their stories, equally dramatic and life-changing. Gary lost an eye when he was 17 in a workplace accident, decided not to sue. Tom lost three fingers, thankfully sewn back on, but with limited ability in terms of the use of them. And he decided, even though there was no guard on the bacon slicer in his supermarket, there should have been, he decided not to sue either. That's Tom and Gary. 51551 Joe at rt.ie.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Back to people who could have claimed, could have sued, but didn't. Edward Cummins. Edward, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe? How are you keeping?
Good. What happened in your case, Edward?
Well, you know, I do a lot of cycling, Joe, and okay. I took early retirement last year, and one of the, like 15% of the reason why I did is because it's so dangerous now to cycle in Dublin City, because I was knocked off my bike maybe once a year for the 5 years previously before I retired.
Okay.
But what happened was I was going out for a cycle. You know, I go up into the Wicklow Mountain, maybe Glendalough, back to Blessington. So I was on my way up, going past the spa well. And I always cycle very close to the path.
Okay.
You just get used to doing that because give the motorists plenty of room to go by me. So I'm cycling along, minding my own business, thinking about the cycle ahead. The next thing I know, I'm in the middle of the road, you know, on the white line.
Mm-hmm.
The back of the bike is in bits. The derailleur's broke, the wheel is gone, and I didn't know what happened. I was kind of in shock. So people came over to me and said, "Are you all right?" So I said, "Yeah, I think I am, you know." And then I saw this car moving slowly in front of me, very, very slowly now, a red car. And I thought, that must have been the guy that hit me. And he went up the road about 200 metres and stopped. So the people got me to the side of the road. And then after the shock went, the pain kicked in. I couldn't stand up, you know, my leg was very sore. Rang the guards, told them that I was involved. What I thought was a hit and run, and they said, "No, there's no one, we can't send anybody down to you." So I said, "Okay." So the people that were with me there then left me. I was on the side of the road, mm-hmm. rang a colleague in work, Damo. I said, "Damo, I'm going out for a cycle. Someone's hit me. I think it's the guy up here who's just sitting in his car, not even moving, 200 metres up the road." He said, "Okay, Ed, I'll go down and pick you up and I'll bring you to the hospital." So I'm sitting on the side of the road. God, I can't stand up, you know. Mm-hmm. And this woman comes along and she says, "Me all right." I said, "Would you do me a favour? Go down to that car there and just tap on the window and ask him, did he hit me?"
Okay.
So she goes down.
Yeah.
He winds down the window, says something. She says something. She walks on. So anyway, I'll make a long story boring.
Yeah.
I went to the hospital.
Yeah.
Nothing broke. Got an x-ray. Nothing broke. Just there and walk for a week on crutches. And the guards rang me and said to me, "Yeah, Mr. Cummins, we think we have the guy who hit you." I said, "How did you get him?" Well, apparently he went home that day, said to his missus, "Do you know what, I think I'm at the hitting somebody."
Okay.
And she said, "What do you mean, do you think I'm at the hitting?" Well, I just blanked out, and next thing I know, I'm going to the road. The front tyre is punctured. And so after a while, I got out and fixed it. I said, "Oh, we can't have this. Go down to the guards." So went down to the guards. What he had was an epileptic fit, right? And he hadn't taken his medication that day.
Okay.
And he then was good enough to say to her, like his wife was then really on the ball, said, no, let's get back in the car, go down to the guard station.
Yeah, great.
So
great.
The guards rang me and said to me, we found a man. Mm-hmm. What do you want to do to pursue this? I just want to talk to him, I said. So she gave him his number. I talked to him, I said, how are you? I said, you're a very lucky man, I said, because if you had a child or maybe an old lady, things could have been different. But I'm like at the peak of my fitness. I'm very fit, very strong. So what I'd like to do for me for you is, I said, the only thing I'm looking off you is £100 for the hospital and to get the bike fixed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he said, oh, that's very good of you, because if you had it claimed, I had it, it could have affected my driving, and it could have affected the fact that they might have thought I couldn't drive again, I would have, because I need my car for my work. I said, so I met him in the bicycle shop where the bike was fixed.
Okay.
He paid £150 for the bike to be fixed,
right.
And £100 he gave me for the hospital, and I said, shook his hand, I wished him all the best, and I hope he didn't forget to take his medication in the future. And he said, and that's the last I've seen of him, I haven't heard anything. I've had kind of maybe not nightmares about it, but thinking, well, what if he ever ever happened again, should I have done something? But that's why things happen for a reason.
But
you know?
Edward, you be the judge of this, you're the one who met the man. Did it sound like he was contrite, that he did see the seriousness of it?
He was very, very contrite.
Yeah.
He was very sorry, he was very apologetic. He was really sincere, really genuine, you know. So I knew he was like, he knew that if I had to put a claim in, it would have had maybe disastrous effects for his career or for his life or whatever, particularly that he hadn't taken his medication, you know. And the guard said to me, you know, this could have serious consequences. But I said, no, he made a genuine mistake, you know. He just forgot to take his medication and he learned a lesson from it. Because I said, you've learned a really important lesson about this.
And did you, sorry, Edward, did you actually say to him, listen, I'm not going to take this any further, don't be worrying?
Yeah, that's what I said to him, yeah.
Well done.
You know, because that was one of several. I mean, I was hit by a drunk driver one night. He drove off. Well, he knocked me off my bike and I was lying on the path. And when I got up, I kind of lay there for a minute or two and said, my legs are okay, my hands okay. I got up off the road on the path and I looked up and I could see him. He got out of his car and he was standing at the driver's car looking down at me. And when he saw he got me getting up, he drove on.
Okay.
You know, so
he made a mistake, to say the least, didn't he?
That guy with the medication just made a simple mistake.
And
what goes around comes around. Yeah, it's all karma, you know.
That's what I was going to ask you. So you're happy that you made that decision?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay, well done, Edward. And you're still cycling, I hope.
I'm cycling nearly every day, yes. Because I'm retired now, so I can do as much cycling as I want.
Yeah,
always very careful of helmet, lights, gloves, everything, because it's...
Yeah, but most fellas and women who retire want to relax. How many kilometres a day, a week? Sorry, a week would you cycle? Not a day.
I do the Wicklow 200 on next Sunday week. That's 200 kilometres, 126 mile in about, takes about 9 hours to do it, 9.5 hours. And then I do a big race in France, the Marmot. That's up four mountains. One of them is like 8,500 feet.
Yeah.
So that's 110 miles. That takes me about 10.5 hours. But I do about, like at the peak of my training, I do about 400 to 600 kilometres a week.
A week?
Yeah.
Should just people don't do that in their car?
I know.
And their reps.
Yeah, no, cycle, I've never had a car. My carbon footprint is very low.
Well done.
Nobody in the house has a car. My daughter, my wife doesn't have a car.
Is that deliberately?
Deliberately, yeah, because I don't need it in this city. Who wants to drive in this city?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Just mad.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, Edward, good karma to you and your family. That's Edward Cummins. Best of luck on the Wicklow 200, everybody who participates in that on Sunday week. Where's Patrick? Patrick, you were in a car accident.
Hello?
Yeah, what happened, Patrick?
Yeah, Patrick. Right, I was taking my daughter home on a Sunday evening.
Right.
And we just got to a set of traffic lights. And a guy jumped the lights. We had the green lights. A guy jumped the lights, crashed into the side of us. So we both pulled into the side of the road, exchanged details, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next morning, obviously, I reported to the my insurance company what happened. They sent out a form, filled in the form, and they said, well, in another week or whatever, the assessor will be down to assess the damage. Says fair enough. So in the next few days, then we had a letter from a firm of solicitors in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, oh, we understand you've been in a car accident, and we will be acting on your behalf. And can you fill in this form for us? So I thought to myself, well, why do I need to fill in another form? Because I've already filled in the form for the insurance company.
But had you decided then you weren't going to claim?
No, absolutely. Well, I was just claiming for the damage for the car.
Okay, but you weren't going to take it any further.
No, well, because as far as I was concerned, we were all right. My daughter, a week afterwards, like she just had a bit of a sore neck or something like that, but nothing to get excited about. There was nothing wrong with me. There was two youngsters in the back of the car. There was nothing wrong with them either. That's the way it was left. But this Fairbus solicitor, they kept writing to us and ringing us and saying, well, you know, are you going to fill in this form and we're acting on your behalf, blah, blah, blah. And I kept saying no. I said, you know, I'm not interested, nothing wrong with us. So thinking about it anyway, I think what she was trying to say to us without putting words in my mouth, like, is, are you going to claim for whiplash or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyway, we eventually got the car fixed. And at the end of it all, then she rang one day and said, well, look, for the hassle that you've had, I'm going to get a cheque for you for €120 from the insurance company, just for the convenience you've had.
Okay.
So that's
and you never looked for, you never looked. Oh, and do you stand over that decision in retrospect, Patrick? Are you glad you took that route of not pursuing?
I can't stand this. It absolutely bugs me day in, day out. About all these bloody claims are going on. But anyway.
Okay, now remember, a lot of claims where people have injuries and
a few years before that, it's probably my own fault, but going back one night about 1 o'clock in the morning, with three of us in the car, very bad night, driving along about 70 kilometres, and come around the bend, the car come the other side with his headlights blaring. But what I didn't see was a big flood in the middle of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And into the flood, car into the ditch. And the next thing we realised that we had actually landed roof up on the roof down. We were standing on our head, but we didn't realise at the time. I was saved on the car, but we eventually got out of the car. And that was the end of that one. The car was a write-off, but there was no claims.
Okay, well done. Yeah, but as you say, you're glad, and you obviously, from what you said, you deeply dislike the whole compensation culture, as it's called in this country.
I do. I really bugs me. That's
point well made, Patrick. Thanks indeed. That's Patrick in the Midlands. 51551 Joe at RT.ie.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And back to people who could sue but decided not to sue for compensation. Mary Tobin, you were in Roche's Stores, which is in Henry Street in Dublin.
Joe, good to talk to you again.
Likewise, and it's in Roche's Stores is now Debenhams. Yeah, what happened?
In Roche's Stores years ago, and there was a little girl in front of me who slipped backwards.
Okay.
And as I was more or less near her, I stretched out to catch her, and then I felt my neck just giving in, terrible pain.
Okay, you're on the escalator.
So I was on the escalator.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what, Joe? I think it was the stairs I was going up.
Oh, stairs, okay. But she fell back for whatever reason.
But yeah, and she was okay then. But, yes, I had a pain in my neck for a few days, and somebody told me about Dan O'Neill. You know Dan, the horse down in County Carlow.
The bone setter, yeah.
Sir, did you never hear of him, no?
Well, I've heard of him now.
Yeah, well, he put his hands each side of my neck. Somebody was telling me that he was great. He's more or less a bone setter. And this was about a fortnight after it happened, and he put his hands each side of my neck, and he clicked it into place. And he told me to go home and get a little brace for about a fortnight and that it would be gone. And that's exactly, Joe, what happened.
Oh, magnificent. That's the Noli,
you know,
isn't it?
Isn't
that the horse he trained?
About people, you know, making... Yeah. I didn't make a complaint. I didn't make a claim, not at all. Now, you know, people are getting whiplash. And there are exceptions to the rule where whiplash is sustained with other serious injuries. But generally speaking... Whiplash, to my mind anyway, is an easy option to get compensation. In England, they only give 3,000 to 4,000 if
it's very
bad. And in Ireland, they give up to 18,000 to 20,000 as compensation for whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think that it's an easy option, myself, for people to make a claim.
And yes. Did any of your friends say to you, Mary, you're in roaches, so something wrong with the stairs. You saved that little girl probably from
seeing. One of them said, God, did you not make a claim against roaches' doors? But sure, it never would enter my mind. Why would I make a claim? Because I was the one that stretched out to prevent the little girl from falling.
Well done.
Sure.
And you feel, looking back on the decision, I know you probably get a bit of neck pain, do you, every now and again?
Now and again, with the very cold weather, you would get slight pain. But nothing to worry about.
Well done.
There are exceptions, Joe, to the rule of people getting whiplash and other injuries in car accidents or otherwise. And I feel that the compensation for whiplash is outrageous.
Okay, Mary Tobin. Thanks, Mary Tobin's in Lucan, and good health to you, Mary. Gerry O'Toole, we mentioned Dan O'Neill, the bone setter, and Dan Oley, I don't know if he's still doing it, was a horse he trained, wasn't he? A magnificent horse. Gerry O'Toole. Gerry, what happened in your case?
I got rear-ended by an articulated truck, and he put me into the van that was in front of me in the line of traffic. So I had a bump on the back of my head and a sore neck and whatever. Okay. But my van was considerably shorter than it had been before it happened.
Okay.
But the guy with the Arctic accepted responsibility. So I went off home and I took 2-sulpidine and I went into work the next day. But my problem arose when the assessor arrived to... value my truck, and the offer that he made was derisory. I had spent a fortune on this thing. Now, I'm not interested in what the number plate says. I'm interested in how the condition of the vehicle. So I had spent a fortune on this thing. He was telling me, there was X amount of miles on it, it was whatever year it was, and it was worth this amount of money, and that was that. So this negotiations went on for a number of days. But in the end, I told them that if it was to be done again, I would have a neck brace on. And I would be claiming, because it was obviously the only way that I was going to get compensated for my vehicle. So that's my story.
What were you offered, Gerry? Like were you offered the replacement cost of a van?
I had to put €5,000 what I got.
So you lost out on an accident.
Get an equivalent vehicle.
Okay, you lost out on an accident which was not your fault.
Absolutely, yes.
And are you saying if it happened again, you would put on a brace?
I would.
You would, okay.
Now, I was... When I was growing up, nobody claimed. In actual fact, insurance money was deemed to be unlucky.
Karma again, people. And there seems to be the stories you've heard today, all those people, I think every single one of them could have sued with an enormous amount of legitimacy, but they decided not to, and they felt that it all came round. And indeed, Tanya and Adrian Lumsden earlier on were saying that as well, and good karma hopefully will come to all those people, including the Carnegie Court Hotel, who jumped in to save the day and organise a wedding for them within a fortnight, tomorrow fortnight. Okay, back tomorrow at 1:45. Ruth Kennington on sound, Lorley Davis, the BCO, Tara Locker Grant produced, and Ray Darcy is next live from Bloom, where we will be tomorrow at 1:45. Good afternoon.